My name is Sophie Madeline Dess, and my debut novel is called What You Make of Me.
What You Make of Me is the debut novel by Sophie Madeline Dess. It follows two tight-knit adult siblings, Dimitri and Ava, artists of very different mediums. As Dimitri's death draws near, which I promise isn't a spoiler, Ava recalls some of their experiences growing up and throughout young adulthood that contributed to their complicated relationship. I recently spoke with Sophie Madeline Dess about the differences between artistic mediums and her own appreciation of art. From KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay, and here's my conversation with Sophie Madeline Dess. So when the book opens, we're faced with information that could be considered a spoiler, but it really is not. We learn that Dimitri has a brain tumor and his sister, Ava, who's a painter, is writing about him and their life together. What else should our listeners know about this book? Do you have like an elevator pitch for it, an elevator speech?
So I would never have been able to write an elevator pitch for it, but luckily one has been written for me and I use it all the time, which is two siblings in a kind of fiercely codependent relationship contend with who and what they're willing to sacrifice for their art. That was the kind of copy that's been out there, that is out there. I would maybe add to that, there's a woman involved who they both are very interested in, and that complicates the dynamic between them. And overall, yeah, I it definitely those centers around these two siblings who you meet right in the beginning. And there is lots of kind of madness and obsession, but also hopefully a little bit of humor and fun involved throughout the novel.
What should our readers know about these siblings? What, you know, help us get to know Ava and Dimitri a little bit?
Okay, well, as children, they have their essence and their spirit kind of there already as children, where Ava and Dimitri are both irreverent in their own ways. They both don't like to follow the rules, but Ava is just so much more violent in the way that she pursues her rule breaking. So she was born with this just kind of fury. She's got to do things her way. She has to do things the way she thinks will, I don't know, reveal things or reveal people to themselves. She thinks she has this know-how and plans to use it. Whereas Dimitri is a little bit more circumspect. He also has a little bit of hating society, maybe a little bit, but he's much more social and part of the world and cerebral and interested, reads books, you know, the kind of person that you might hate, but respect because he has an intelligence that's admirable, I think.
So despite their closeness, Ava and Dimitri, they practice very different forms of art. Ava paints while Dimitri is a filmmaker and writer. Ava often considers the difference between these mediums as, you know, painting allows for interpretation while film and writing are almost too factual. And she's convinced that people want to see themselves through others' eyes, not how they really are. Ava thinks writing is an insufficient medium. Can you talk about this idea and maybe the push and pull between these philosophies throughout the book?
Yes, thank you. I think a lot about this because I am clearly writing. So any limits that Ava discusses are limits that I'm subjected to as a writer myself, that I think any writer is subjected to. But yeah, one of her main problems is when you write something down, there's no way to fully describe anything. Experiences are just go beyond language in every way. They're different phenomena. Experiencing something physically and emotionally, she gets so antsy at the fact that there's no proper way to properly describe something. And to try to reduce experience into language in writing is annoying to her. People who think that they can do it annoy her. And the only thing, as you so beautifully put, the only thing that allows for real interpretation and therefore real reality is painting, because that's much more irreducible. You look at a portrait of somebody, especially if it's a little bit more abstract, and you can never quite know it, or you can read a ton into it and all of those readings could be correct at the same time. Whereas a sentence can only kind of mean what the sentence means. These are her views. These are not necessarily my views, but those limits itch at her. And throughout the book, she plays with limits of perception. So she has to do kind of multiple variations of certain paintings to make sure she's getting at the ambiguity well enough. And sometimes she fails and sometimes she doesn't, but she knows what her project is, which is to represent what she sees in all of its unknowability. Like it's that paradox, basically, that she loves.
You know, continuing with that idea, I noted so many nods to the title, the idea of what you make of someone. Ava is mostly interested in her interpretations of others, isn't she?
She is. But again, I think it comes down to the fact that she thinks her interpretation of others will help them see themselves because her interpretation is so objective and absolute and has to do with like the laws of beauty that she understands. And her intention is always, I think, yeah, to get people to see themselves correctly. That's what I mean when I say, or I guess when I think, that she has that kind of arrogance. She's like, I know how to do it. Let me do it. That feeling is definitely in her.
There's a repeated image of a person looking into a mirror, the art hanging at Ava's school, her father's assumptions of the portrait Ava painted for him, Dimitri dancing. Can you talk a little bit about this metaphor?
Yeah, I think one of the main things that intrigues me about, or that interests me about, reflections is there's sometimes if you're walking on the street, and maybe this is specific to New York City, how often it happens, but if, it's happened to everybody, I'm sure. You see a mirror, and before you recognize that it's you, you for a split microcosmic second think it's nobody. It's like it's a body that you've never seen before. And that moment before you fill that reflected image in with everything you are, with all of your perceptions of yourself, that objective understanding of yourself, again, in that absolute microsecond, is so compelling to me. And Dimitri has an extended moment like that when he's in the dance hall and he does not realize that he's dancing towards himself in the mirror. He has an extended period of that weirdo, like, seeing yourself but not quite seeing a body that's exactly yours, not realizing it's yours. And that's always just a cool moment to me. In terms of talking about it as a metaphor, I love thinking about it. I've never thought about it honestly as a metaphor before, but now that I am, I can think of a million things. Just how hard it is to see yourself objectively, of course, and also how much of ourselves is just a matter of what we decide to usher in. Like it's we don't stand for anything if we don't bring it in. So what are we bringing into ourselves? It's always a choice to do that. You can see yourself objectively. It's a choice to bring yourself in. So I don't know. I don't know. That's a good, I'll be thinking about that question. It's a good question.
Ava felt that Dimitri's face was off limits to her when she was painting. Can you talk about that?
He at one point said to her, "Do not represent me." They were in, she was sleeping under his bed because she had nowhere else to live, and he's in school. And she's painted him in order to try to win this portrait competition. And he says to her, "You can't paint me again because look at what you've done to me. I look so weak in this paint. Like, you've painted me to look beyond weak. And I don't ever want to see it again. I don't want to see, to your point about the title, I don't want to see what you make of me. I don't want to see that. So don't do it again." And Ava took him at his word, or I guess Ava obliged him and didn't paint him for a long time. And then, of course, the reason this novel even exists is he's dying. He's about to be, he's coma, about to die. They're going to take him off life support. And all of the paintings in her upcoming show are of him. And that is the body of the novel essentially is that catalogs all of the paintings. However, they're abstract. So one of the things she makes a point to say is if you looked at those portraits, she's still not technically painting his face because you could look at one and see like an elephant tooth or a star exploding, you know, I don't know. But yeah, he was like, "Do not reduce me." She's the one person she might feel that she's reduced in her work, and she doesn't like that. But yeah.
I want to talk about the structure of the book that you just mentioned, that it's basically a catalog for her show. Throughout the text, you know, I read and listen at the same time. Throughout the text, words or phrases had asterisks placed beside them, and then they were footnoted. And it wasn't like a typical footnote. It was the information of what would have been included in the catalog, in the show catalog. In the audiobook, the footnotes were presented like this.
When he paused what he was doing, when he looked at me and tilted his neck forward without moving the rest of his body, I knew something else was coming. And then he lifted the dictionary at the corner of his desk and threw it at me. Hard, where I saw his lips pull back with effort. Note, pull back. Oil and tempera on clayboard, small. Painting with tempera is never a good idea.
Talk to me about adding this element to the text.
Okay, so this element of the text actually has a story behind it. What happened was there was a initial conception of this book, which was just like it, the title was the cat, like the real catalog, and it was Ava wresting the production of the catalog into her own, taking it all into her own hands from the banal bureaucratic administrators who run the museums or the galleries or whatever, who were going to reduce it. And then that whole thing went away for maybe 2 or 3 years. The catalog idea went away. It was always in my head, but it went away. And I can't explain why. I think I thought that that was all scaffolding. That was unnecessary. I didn't need it. And then I've told the story before. Basically, the novel was about to go to press and I drove out to this beach. I'm a terrible driver. So it was like the whole way it was reckless. I don't even know why I did it, but there was an urge to see really rough water. I live in New York City along the East River. I wanted like rough, big waves along a cliff, et cetera, the drama of it. And I wasn't going to bring my phone, but at the last minute, I was like, okay, I'll do it. And then I was walking down the beach. Again, the book is about to go to press. I call my editor there have to be footnotes. I have to have footnotes. It has to still be a catalog. I'm going to change the introduction to the book, which is the last thing they want you to touch. I'm going to add footnotes into all of these pages and transform the raison d'etre, like the entire concept of it, if that's okay with you. And of course, my editor, who is brilliant and amazing and encouraging and all the other things, was like, okay, that sounds good. We can do that. So I went home. I just ended up changing the first paragraph and then little sprinkles throughout and wrote all of the footnotes maybe in 1 or 2 nights less and sent those into the editor, chose the words that were going to be associated with the paintings. And there it is. So close to press. My heart still has palpitations, but it was there, went away, came back. That's how those happened.
At one point in the book, I wrote in the margin, why does Ava always want to paint the women Dimitri loves? Mm-hmm. But then there are, you know, a couple of quotes that I want to mention. It never occurred to me when I was younger that Dimitri would be attracted to someone without me, because different desires would make us what we were not, namely two separate people. And then another one, at this point, I've yet to ask myself a central question, which is whether my feelings toward Nati are the result of my trying to outpace Dimitri's desire or my desire for Nati is entirely my own. And I wonder if the answer to my question that I wrote in the margin can be found in these statements.
I think that there's more. The thing that kills me about Ava, and so many things tell me about her, but one of the things is that she does introspect. Like that's a moment, that's a rare kind of moment of introspection for her where she's like, I don't know what's going on with me, but she never quite gets to the origin. She never quite gets all the way down. And I think that those though are the preliminary thoughts. Like what is the nature of this? What is the inciting incident behind this desire for Nati? Again, she doesn't then ask, wait, what was I thinking when I was a kid again? Oh yeah, that when Dimitri has other, she doesn't go all the way back, but she starts her self-awareness there. And I think for the reader, that's, as you just pointed out so astutely, that is definitely a moment that kind of is supposed to reference back to that initial idea of what are we if we're not having the same desires? I don't know what I am if that's not true anymore. So yes, exactly. That's how that idea plays out. She kind of comes into awareness about it, not as deeply as you'd want her to, but you know, maybe life is long, so we'll see where she goes.
Can you tell me about your own experience with art? I mean, I read that you're a critic, but I assumed that was a literary critic. Are you also an artist?
So I have no formal training as an art historian or as a painter or really with anything to do with art. Everything that I know or feel about art is naive, I guess, and not professional and not academic or any of those things. So it's funny to be asked about art, and it's also funny to be asked to write about art, which I love doing, even though I also, like Ava, feel like writing about art just reduces it into language, which is terrible and terrifying to me. But anyway, yeah, no, I have no formal training in any of those fields. I'm a terrible painter most of the time. Really ugly, atrocious shit no one should see. And I think I just love shutting up, like not talking and looking at things. So I can spend over the summer, for example, I had this habit of when I was done with work, going to the museum and just spending at just like 3 hours, no phone, no nothing, just silence. And it helped me. It's meditative and it's such a privilege to be able to do something like that. I obviously can't do that now. Can't do that anymore. That was a once in a lifetime ability and once in a lifetime amount of time to have on your hands. But I love the silence that you can feel when you look at something. It's the type of silence that you don't get anywhere else. And yeah, it's difficult to talk about because it feels s silly almost. But I don't know. I don't know. I don't have any training in it. Everything I think about it feels stupid to me, but then it comes out. And I don't know. You try to get closer to some kind of experience of reality in it, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
We have talked about a lot. Is there anything that you would like to talk about that I haven't asked?
Somebody asked me if I would rather be Ava or Dimitri, and of course my answer was neither, not a day in my life, not one, not either of them. But I think that's something that's always interesting in re these characters are, as I've said before, nothing like me, you know, have nothing really to do with me. And I think that's why it's wonderful to me to see people's reactions to people who I too consider separate, you know. That's been really, really, really fun because people bring up thoughts about them that I've never had before, could not have imagined having. And but I still am like, oh yeah, that sounds right. That sounds true. So I'm just I if anything, just want to express my gratitude for that. Feel really grateful.
Well, the book is What You Make of Me, Sophie Madeline Dess. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Beth.
That was Sophie Madeline Dess, author of the book What You Make of Me, which was published by Penguin Press. The audio excerpt was courtesy of Penguin Random House Audio from What You Make of Me by Sophie Madeline Dess, read by Candace Fitzgerald, copyright 2025 Sophie Madeline Dess, copyright 2025 Penguin Random House LLC, all rights reserved. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. Our producers are Haley Krausen and Katie Lanning, and our marketing coordinator is Carly Cooper. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.